Let's go ahead and jump in and begin. I'd like to welcome everybody who's not only here for the call, but also those of you who are at home or traveling or at work, and you've downloaded the MP3 version of the chat and are listening on your own time. We appreciate your joining us, and we're excited about the discussions that we're going to have, and we've already had. This is a really rare sort of opportunity for us to enjoy Rex's wisdom and to discuss some challenging topics. And so thank you for joining us, whether you're here live or recorded. And to begin with, let me briefly introduce the man that I'm speaking with tonight. Rex Steven Sykes is an NLP master trainer that has been around the world of NLP for many, many years. And I first met him when I was very green, just getting started in 1997. I immersed myself for months and months and months of study, and I looked around for who was going to be an extraordinary trainer, the right trainer for me, and without question, after having met a variety of trainers, Rex was exclusively the right choice for me for practitioner. And so I attended his 14-day practitioner trainings, and I count that experience as one of the most profound learning experiences of my life. And tonight's topic is especially exciting to me because I'm quite certain, and maybe this discussion will help bring some of that out, that Rex was one of the strongest influences on the way that I think about constructing learning experiences. Rex has an approach to training that we're going to hope to tap into tonight called mind design. And it's his own unique amalgam and creation, both from his own experience and also from some of his early training experiences. And we're going to tap into some of that. As someone who attended his practitioner training in 97, I had a chance to be the beneficiary of its use. He was using it while designing or running us through his practitioner training. Although I never really had an opportunity to learn as much as I wanted to about what mind design was or is. So we're going to hopefully be able to tap into some of that tonight. So that should give those of you who are on the call and those of you who are listening at home an opportunity to understand that Rex has been around a long time. He's got experience and knowledge that most of us who are newer at NLP, and I include myself in that group, really haven't had a chance to experience. So if you're relatively new to NLP, or perhaps if you're already in my active list and maybe you've attended some of my courses, I'm referring tonight to someone who is an extraordinary influence on me. So with that in mind, I hope you're as excited as I am because it's going to be a neat conversation. Now that you know a little bit about Rex and you know a little bit about our topic for tonight, we're talking about accelerated learning and learning experiences and training experiences and Rex's mind design. Our format for the call tonight, we're going to talk for about 20-25 minutes, and then we're going to take a break for Q&A, and we're also going to mention our practitioner training that's coming up in November. And then we're going to jump into 20 more minutes of discussion and see where that conversation takes us. And we'll finalize the conversation with some more Q&A and give you a chance to interact with Rex and, you know, tap into some of his ideas. So I hope that gets us started on a good note. Rex, welcome. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, and hi to everyone listening live or otherwise. I guess if you're listening, you're listening live, even if it's recorded.
That's true.
Yeah, or at least I would hope so.
Sure. So let's get started with just finding a little bit about your mind design approach to training. Tell us how that evolved, please, how that got started.
Well, I think in the last conversation we had, I talked to you about my experience. I mean, somewhat, you know, it came out of my own, mind design came out of my seeking to improve my own life, to make my life work in a way that it hadn't been, and to make my dreams come true and my hopes come true, and to start getting things in my life that until that moment I hadn't been getting. And I hadn't been getting, I didn't know NLP at the time, so that came shortly thereafter. But the original was a way of directing my own brain, and it was what I called directed questions and using questions and finding that, you know, the brain, unlike what we're usually taught in the mind sciences, the brain is not truly a machine. It's not hardwired or softwired. There's not circuitry in the way that you think about it. It's more like a jungle. It's more a living organism. It does make billions of connections and have neural pathways, but it's alive as opposed to this machine. And if you look at a garden, you know, it can be very beautiful or it can be overgrown with weeds. And my goal was to say, hey, you know, if I'm going to live on this planet, then I should be the owner of the planet. And that doesn't mean that I don't allow other people into the planet or I keep people from my backyard. What it means is that I want it to be the best experience that I have, especially if you only go around once, and if you reincarnate and you have to do it over and over until you get it right, well, then I want to get it right sooner rather than later. I want it to be a paradise. I want it to be the kind of life that anyone in their right mind would choose, one that's filled with love and life and ecstasy. It's filled with the kinds of things that you enjoy, whether it's family or friends, career. Abundance, yeah, exactly. You know, it wasn't money driven so much as it was more just lifestyle driven. It was just, you know, I mean, money comes when you're doing the thing that you love. And by the way, if I sniffle and stuff like that, I've been detoxing, so I'm going through a little of what they call die-off, which is like a little bit of a cold, a little bit of runny nose, is some of the toxins, you know, exit my body. So I noticed that about an hour ago I started getting stuffy and sniffly and stuff, so I apologize. But it's a good thing. But it's a good thing. All right, so anyway, the point being is that what I did with Mind Design and was about directing my own mind to find the things in life that were the juiciest, the most sumptuous, the most wonderful, the most rewarding, the most team-oriented, the best win-wins. Because when you think that way and you contribute to others and you add value to other people before you expect to get value in return, then magic truly does happen. And so I came up ultimately, you know, with the NLP, I came up with Rex's Rules, which is kind of a joke, but I mean, it's not really. It's principles and applying those principles that make everything work. And it's about directing your mind in a way that says, well, you know, why not presuppose that you have what you want and ask yourself how delighted you're going to be when you get there? I mean, it's really kind of starting at the end point. And then discovering the map or the path along the way by being curious and by exploring. Most people, you know, we're going to do a Q&A, and most people want answers. It is not the answer that directly contributes to the quality of your life. What contributes to the quality of your life is the question that you ask. And you can ask open and closed questions, or you can open questions, or you can ask closed questions. So you can say, what's the capital of Arizona? And bang, your brain will tell you. But if you say, I wonder how much fun I'm going to have, that's an open question. You don't know the answer, and your brain has to search for it. And so out of that curiosity, out of that fascination, out of that delight, and out of that mindset is where Mind Design came about. Because later when I got into NLP, and I'm going to answer a question that somebody asked, not last week, but I promised I would ask. They asked offline. They asked on Facebook. They said, why are there so many NLPers, professional NLPers, who have communication problems? Why is there divorce? Why is there problems? Why do they do? And it occurred to me when I was looking at NLP and at these people that most people don't apply it to themselves in the same way that they do to others. In other words, if you're a therapist and you sit down and you're trying to help another person unlock their potential to get over, you know, problems, which NLP first and foremost seem to be about. In other words, how do you get people to get over phobias? How do you get people to get rid of these things? So it always was about taking things away. And my question was, well, but then what do you replace them with? If you replace them with something of the same nature or the same equivalence, then guess what? You really haven't done much. You know, you take away one fear and have another one. So you want, what you want to do is you want to decide, what do I want instead? And if what you want is a garden paradise, if what you want is a life so filled and, you know, and brimming with abundance and enjoyment, then now you've got a good place to start. Because the only way to have that is to make sure other people have it too. You can't be selfish, you can't be stingy, you can't be a liar, you can't be dishonest, you can't be nasty, you can't be mean, you can't be crabby, you can't be all those things. What you have to do is be filled with fascination, curiosity, openness. You have to be able to explore and adventure. And therein started to become all of Mind Design. You know, there's people in NLP had communication problems because they had powerful communication techniques, but instead of going to what was the purpose of these things, it seemed that people were using them to manipulate or browbeat each other. People had remarkable technology. Huh?
And to be petty.
And it was And to be petty, right. And you know what? Everybody is a human. And at some point, yes, cut your losses and move on. In other words, I don't think that just because you married somebody at some point in your life, you have to stay married all of your life. Maybe it's best that you separate. That's just the way the world is. You know, maybe it's best that you change careers. Maybe it's best that you do other things. But only you get to decide that. I can't decide that for you, or at least I shouldn't, and you shouldn't be deciding for me, and we shouldn't be judging each other about the choices we make. But it did occur to me that so many of the top NLP people were miserable, my experience of them, were not really very nice, friendly, loving, wonderful, kind, open, accepting people. And you know where I found all that was more along the lines of gurus. Meditators, people who were tree huggers, people who said, wow, let's be at one with the universe. Let's get into touch with, you know, the divine principles that govern the... And some of it got, you know, mystical and way out there, and people were wrapping themselves in purple bubbles to protect themselves and doing, you know, this and that, and communicating with aliens and everything. But at the heart of it all, was this idea that life can be fantastic. And you have to decide each and every moment of each and every day what you want to have. And that became one of my huge things of mine to decide. Do you want crap or do you want diamonds? Do you want, you know, to dig around in the dirt and wallow like a pig in the dirt and the mud, or do you want to have a rich growing garden? It's your choice.
And so the core of that stems from constantly asking open-ended questions that were positively framed.
It does, and it's not just the question, because I was going to put out a product about questions, and the problem that I've always had with people is they go, well, then what's the question for this? It's not for me to tell you what the question is. It's for you to discover the question that makes it different in your life. It's the exploration. I've always said exploration is the doorway to adventure. In other words, it's the exploring. It's the looking at differently. It's taking different vantage points. It's thinking about it in new ways. It's telling yourself things you never told yourself before. It's grappling with new feelings. It's doing all sorts of different stuff in new ways and novel ways that you never did previously. And it starts with curiosity, and it starts with fascination, and it starts with delight, and it starts with good feelings, and it starts with goodwill and all of those things. Because if you wish good on other people, you will wish good on yourself. So part of it has to do with recognizing what you're grateful for. Part of it has to do with looking for what's good and new in your life moment to moment. It's about changing the moments and making the tiny little changes. And I've always said this, and you'll hear me say it in the program when you attend, or if you attend, or if you listen to my tapes or any of those things. Water under pressure can cut just about anything. It's just a tiny little opening, you know, in a tube in which they run water through at a very big, very high pressure, and it can cut through steel and concrete and everything else. But it's that little opening that has to be opened first, and that's the same way with us. We have to open up these little tiny places in ourselves through which we can pour powerful, wonderful things so that they come out the other side. And where do they come out? They come out in your life. I love to say on Facebook, if you see it, there's a quote. I say, evil is as evil does, which comes from stupid is as stupid does. So yes, it's a bastardized version of, you know, Forrest Gump. But there is a Bible verse that says, by their fruits you will know them. And the question, when Jonathan said he looked around at NLP trainers, we did the same thing. And when it comes to looking, what are their fruits? Do they walk the talk? Do they live the lifestyle? Do they embody and embrace the very thing that they're talking about? Or are they otherwise? They say it, but they are otherwise. There's no
sure.
reason. And when it came to my own training, what I realized at one point is I used big crank up, move away stuff for a long time because that was propulsion, and we'd all learned to do that. You know, but there's no need to be propelled. When people learn, and as we talk about accelerated learning, people learn in a state of optimalness, not in a state of fear. When adrenaline is pumping through you, all you want to do is leave. You want to flee. That's that fight or flight response. So if you're in a seminar and they're cranking up the move away stuff, then you want to get out of there, you know, or you want to get away from whatever it is that's causing you pain. But unless you have the other side to it, unless you have multiple other more pleasant positive attractors, then you won't. Why go from pain into I'm okay? You know, or why to go into pain to freedom from pain? Why not go from pain into ecstasy? So it's really getting people to think and getting people to understand how we learn, how we embrace, how we, you know, and here's one other thing. it stems also from the notion of acceptance. Now, the reason that you will always have trouble with me is because I embrace my contradictions. I am, you know, it's like a ruler has two ends, and I will talk both ends equally. Because I look at it from a different vantage point than some people. Some people say, well, you said this on Monday, but you said this on Wednesday. And I go, yes, Ed, your point is. And they go, well, it's contradictory. But it's not contradictory the higher up you go. It's kind of like if you're lost in a forest and you can't find your way out, you're not going to find it by looking through the trees. You're going to have to climb a high tree and look down on the forest and see if you can find the edges, or you're going to see if you can find a pathway, or you're going to see if you can see a stream or a break or something. So the higher up you go, the more you elevate yourself, the more you're able to understand other things. And so in that case, it comes from deep acceptance. And one of the most positive, powerful forces of change in the world is when you accept what is going on instead of trying to change what is going on. Now, having said that, people say, whoa, wait. You know, my life is shit, and excuse me, my life is doo-doo, and my life is not so good. It's less than glorious, and I want to change that. Okay. Granted, and acknowledge it. Now aim it for how you want it, figure out where you want to go, and now become curious and fascinated about how quickly and easily and wonderfully you can begin to make those things happen as you explore and delight, as you add value to yourself and others, as you look for things that are good and new and wonderful and marvelous, as you embrace principles, but also accept. Accept where you are as a starting point, if nothing else. Accept who you are as a wonderful, unique, incredible person, regardless of what's going wrong or bad or otherwise.
With some love of self.
The wisdom of the self, the wisdom of the masters, the wisdom of timelessness, the wisdom of the universe, the wisdom of, you know, NLP, I said last time, I think, is, you know, it like works on the waves on the top of the ocean and deep down in the bottom, or maybe I didn't, maybe I just said this in a workshop 10 years ago and or in a conversation, because it's one of the things that I've always said. There's a point at which you're centered, and there's a point at which there's turbulence going around, and it's finding your center, and that's truly what Mind Design is about. And so we ran all of the NLP program and practitioner programs through the Mind Design stuff, which is getting you to laugh, getting you to feel good, getting you to have fun, getting you to find out how to transform moments. I'm a big person on principle and purpose, which is what I said before. NLP has always notoriously chunked things down, but we don't really learn anything in a chunked down way except in an NLP program or in a computer science lab or something like that. I mean, think of it this way. I mean, life skills. For example, if you get out and ride a bike, you know, we always use the example, well, you know, unconscious competence, you don't know that you don't know, and then there's conscious incompetence. You know that you don't know. You know you can't ride the bike. And then you start riding the bike, and you're talking yourself through it, and you're trying to balance, and trying to pedal, and you're trying to do all these things, and you're concentrating on it, and there's conscious competence. And then one day you hop on the bike, and you ride off. And you're great. You know, you've ridden off on the bike, and now you can think about other things. You can have your iPod on your head, or you can be talking to somebody. On, you know, well, you shouldn't be, but anyway. You know, same thing with driving a car. But the point is this. You didn't practice just pedaling behavior. You didn't take a pedal off of the bike and examine it for everything that it was and understand gravity and motion and inertia. You didn't sit there with, you know, both pedals and practice with your hands and then with your feet. You didn't get on the bike. You can't get on a bike and balance the bike and not pedal and do it. You can't take it apart. You get on the bike and you fall, and you get on the bike and you fall, and you get on the bike and you fall, and then one day you're on the bike and you don't fall. And yes, you're talking yourself through it, and you're trying to pay attention to different aspects of it, but when you're finally upright, it's because you learned it as a gestalt. You learned it as a whole piece. The thing that kept you from going faster about it was the fact that you had to talk yourself through it.
So, absolutely. Can I ask a couple of questions about that and comment on that as well? You're
sure.
Talking about learning as a gestalt, and that was my experience at your PRAC training. In other words, I almost felt as though you were distracting us with attention on smaller chunk processes or processes while a larger gestalt was being presented or being, let's say, built for us. Because I remember learning more than I'd learned. And how? What was the evidence for that? The evidence was I had showed up the day after your course ended at Richard Bandler's Master Prac, being able to do far more effectively a lot of these techniques and tools And with a greater mastery of my own awareness and state and joy in the process and in the experience, not in the result. That's a key point for me, but in the experience of doing it, of living it, of having fun with it, and enjoying the results as well. But the results were not the only thing being focused on. So something had obviously happened beyond my conscious awareness at your PRAC training. And I have to think back to, and of course, hearing you talking about all these things brings me back to those amazing 14 days where you, every session, whether it was morning or afternoon or night, began with a variety of different exercise drills. You had us do brain gym. I want to talk about that in a little bit. You had us asked us these questions: what's good and what's new, which I, you know, at this point look back on and think, well, that must have been about changing our meta programs, changing our habits, getting us to exercise our brain muscle, if you will, in new, more, you know, personally joyful patterns, as opposed to always looking at the problems. So something had obviously happened with the way that you were conditioning us over time to shift our habits in a more positive, more fruitful direction. And the result was undeniable. Also, a quick comment about your mentioning, the question that you were asked about why do NLPers argue. I also have a quick comment to share about that. It has been my experience that many NLP trainers that I've met along the way seem to not have a prior career where they had some abundant results. So many of them seem, to my eye, to have approached NLP from a place of deprivation or a place of need. And my belief is that many may very well have built the foundation of their NLP careers on top of that need to solve and need to get out of their need. And that sense of deprivation is a terrible place to build a foundation for the kinds of work that you taught us how to do. It was amazing. There were other people that did have wonderful careers prior to that and found NLP to be a calling. I'd like to count myself amongst those folks, but I guess I'll let everybody else be the judge of that. So, again, I think you're right on the money in terms of how you're describing building better patterns, getting people to ask better questions, and the result is profound, really powerful. I also happen to love the nuances, and maybe this is a small chunk comment, the nuances of the complex syntax. You taught us methods of adjusting our language when we ask those better questions that brought us out of the realm of affirmations, of saying things that our unconscious mind could argue with, but instead asking these open-ended questions that our brains couldn't answer quickly, but instead we were sending our unconscious minds off in these wonderful directions to constantly search for good answers. I thought that was amazing. Could you talk about any of those things, please?
Sure. The answer, the correct answer to that is yes, I can. Will I?
Of course.
Absolutely. The principle is immersion. Now, and it goes, again, part of what the occupational hazard that I, or occupational hazard, but the occupation, part of the difficulty that I have is that I start things, like in this phone call, there are things that will be initiated that may be closed weeks or months or, you know, when you come to a training or something like that. The idea is immersion. And it's like diving into a pool. You can't immerse yourself in the water of a swimming pool by standing on the deck, dipping your toe in. You don't immerse yourself by standing on the diving board. You only immerse yourself when you jump in. And when you jump in, you have to suspend certain things. When you jump into a training, when you jump into a life experience, when you jump into anything, hopefully you start to suspend analysis and you start to. You know, just experience or imbibe what's going on. You can always come back and analyze at another time. That's fine. But we want you to be in it. And people come to trainings for a variety of reasons. They'll come to my training for a variety of reasons. Mind design, by the way, I've synthesized things. I've pulled from different areas. My background was in accelerated learning and psychology and communication and then NLP and then all these things. And so I synthesized, I pulled some things I developed, you know, and worked on. But again, it comes back to that basic premise of immerse yourself in the delights and the celebration of what life is all about. And I think you're right about the NLP trainers. I think you're right that a lot of people go, I want to be a trainer. but they don't really have any other career prior to that. You know what I wanted to do? I wanted to take NLP back into my film business, which I've never really actually done. That was my whole goal. I was going to go, you know what, I'm going to take this up. I'm going to go back into Hollywood. I'm going to teach just NLP and acting. Because when I was a young actor, one of my coaches knew everything about NLP in a limited sense without NLP even existing at the time. She knew about, you know, she'd say when people were looking up, you know, she said, well, you're looking for your lines right there. And, you know, and so it was amazing. I mean, so I always wanted to take it back into acting. I'm applying it to the film career and the acting and stuff, but I haven't put it together that way because I've just been distracted. But anyway, you know, I mean, I didn't want to do public seminars as a NLPer. I did, but
initially. Right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was to go back into my field, not leave my field. And so for a while, I was doing so many seminars, I didn't have time to do the movies, you know, and now I'm doing so many movies, I don't have the time to do seminars. So, I mean, it's just that kind of stuff. But anyway, the idea is to immerse and to be in a celebration. And what I found with NLPers primarily, as I said, they were trying to remove things, they're trying to get over things, they're focused on the pain rather than on the promise of wonderfulness. Instead of being focused on, you know, how good things are, they're focused on what bad things are. And I say in the workshops, you know, if you get up in the morning and you look for smiles, you find them. If you look for frowns, you find those too. Because the brain is this incredible thing that whatever you put in as an objective, it will go find. If you want to find examples of where there's corruption in the world, you'll find them. If you want to find where there's examples of wonderfulness in the world, you'll find them. And yes, there's always counterexamples, and every generalization, you know, will pop on itself and all that good stuff. That is part of those contradictory things that always go without saying. That's that yes but stuff that people learn in NLP. But what about this? And it's true. You may find an exception. But the key is you are what you think about most of the time. You become what you think about most of the time. And for me, I realized I was thinking about crap a lot of the time. I was thinking the woe is me stuff. I was thinking I'm not good enough stuff. I was thinking that person's better than me. Screw them. You know, I should have what they have. And that wasn't the way to go through life and have ecstasy. That was a way to go through life and have a lot of pain. So, yeah, you've got to examine your thoughts and you've got to do things. And so what the workshop was it was a trick. It was a way to get you in and have you laugh and have you experience things and have you have fun and have you enjoy. Because here's the thing. If according to NLP and if according to accelerated learning, learning is dependent on the state you're in, then you should be in the optimal state when you're learning, not in fear.
Absolutely.
You should not be afraid. You should not want to flee. You should not be in confusion. You should not be in heavy, dopey trance. You shouldn't be in a workshop where you go, God, I don't remember the 2 weeks because I was zoned through the floor. Because that's not how you live your life. You need to learn it
like that.
Of course you do. And you need to learn it in the way that you live in life. You bring it back into, like I said, I want to bring it back to acting. If you're a basketball player, you want to bring it back to basketball. You're not going to play basketball while you're sleeping. Yes, you may learn while you close your eyes and all that kind of stuff. But the point is, you need to be in the optimal state to fire all those anchors, to have all the associations, to have all the thoughts, to have all the submodality shifts. So rather than telling you to shift one submodality at a time, which we do anyway, because that's the nuts and bolts side that you learn in a practitioner program, we get you to do that up front by tricking you into it. Now that you know it's a trick, well, I'll just have to work harder.
No, that's wonderful. I think the whole idea, I just think it's fabulous that some people truly need to be tricked into having exquisite lives.
I had somebody tell me in Cancun once, no, I'm serious. They said, well, all you do is get people to laugh for like an hour. And I go, have you ever laughed for an hour? Do you know what it's like to laugh? If you laughed every day for an hour, do you know what it would be like? And they go, no. And I said, well, we used to go out in the desert in Oregon, in the middle of the desert, and laugh for an hour. Then Bernie Siegel, Norman Cousins, came along and said, hey, you know, laughter is the best medicine. And then all this scientific research about what happens when you laugh and how when you're hyperventilating through laughter, the healing processes and stuff like that. So, I mean, you know, I would come into a workshop. I would have people laughing, and I would say, okay, you know, just because people go, well, I'm not going to laugh, you know. And I go, just start it. Make it mechanical. Just fake it till you make it. That's the one time when it really does count. Fake it till you make it. You go, oh, I don't feel
like
laughing.
You had it easy up in just outside of Wisconsin. We had 20 people, and by the time it was like 2-3 days in, you didn't have to do much to initiate it. Pretty soon we were all making each other laugh.
Right, right. You just look at each other and laugh. That should be enough. You go, here's 20 people in a room sitting around looking at each other laughing. That should be funny enough. You don't need a reason to laugh. You don't need a reason to have a beautiful life. You don't need a reason to fall in love with somebody. You don't need a reason to make lots of money. You don't need all this stuff. You know what I mean? You just go do it. But the way you go do it is to do it without fear and without hesitation, without sabotaging yourself or somebody else. And the way you do that is just this, you know, you the way you get where you want to go is to travel a little bit in advance of the world. And so what I would do is I would pre-expose people to these principles and these concepts, which is going on even in the phone call, not talking mumbo-jumbo magic, hypnotic installation, and unscrewing your head and all that. But the idea is if you wake up to a new idea, as it's been said, the mind can't go back to the original dimension once it's been stretched to a new idea, and that's what it's about. It's about expanding the world that you live in. It's about having, if you're going to live in a box, make it a huge one. Don't live inside a little one that's narrow and it's constrictive and you can't breathe. And so that's, And so that goes back to why are there NLP trainers that have problems? Well, because they don't think along these lines. They know the technology, but they don't use the technology, you know, or goes back to you are what you think about most of the time. If you think wonderful, beautiful, positive thoughts, that's what you are most of the time. If you think nasty, negative, horrible thoughts, then that's what you are most of the time. And reality comes along, and sometimes people get divorced because what they spend doing about their spouses is thinking more negative thoughts than they think positive thoughts. They forgot the reasons why they fell in love. And yes, you can go back and you can recapture that, or you can cut your loss and go on. The choice is truly yours.
And
you know,
the other person together.
The other person's right, but I'm just saying that it's that's not for me to judge why are those people no longer together because they have NLP. It's like saying why is Donald Trump a jerk because he's got lots of money. I mean, I don't know.
Well, in some cases, if a couple breaks up and NLP was involved, let's say later on after the marriage, it's possible that NLP helped someone to identify reasons why a couple might have grown incompatible over time. These things happen.
Sure, sure.
If a breakup is peaceful, that's even better.
You know, there's the idea. Here's the thing, you know, and we talk about NLP being a chameleon, and this is the practical side to it, and this is the side which I'll not contradict everything I've ever said. And that is, we talk about NLP being a chameleon. You know, you put a chameleon on a green, you know, leaf, and it turns green. You put it on a brown leaf, and it turns brown. You put it on a white leaf, and it disappears. Because it's fried its circuitry. It doesn't know what to do. It vanishes. No, but the point being is we talk about rapport and matching and mirroring to get rapport. What is the purpose of having rapport? If your only purpose is to sell them something or to convince them of something, then after you go, they will have bought, they will have been convinced, and they may have buyer's remorse, and they may decide, you know what, you're really a crappy person because somehow you got them to agree against their best interests. However, if you demonstrate to them that their best interests are in your heart, if you demonstrate to them that you will add value to them without requesting any value be given back, and now you have rapport and you are convincing, then guess what? You're adding
to them. Well, the sales made for the right reasons, and lives are improved.
Well, yeah, and you're adding to them in a substantial way that many people don't. Now, because you're a chameleon and you can do these things, the question becomes, so you're having problems with somebody, at some point you could go, all right, so I'm going to match them, I'm going to mirror them, I'm going to match them, I'm going to mirror them, and then the question becomes, is how long do you have to do that before you go, okay, I'm done. Or, you know what, I'm going to take a break from this now. Now, there is this also this notion, and that is that matching and mirroring, when you're driving down the road, it doesn't always lead to good things. And I tell people this all the time. You're driving down the road, and you're going 55, and somebody pulls up, and they're going right alongside you, and they're going 55. So you go 57, and pretty soon they're going 57. Then you go 59, and they're going 59. Then you go 63, and they're going 63. You know, and then you're going 65, and they're going, and you're like, what the heck is wrong with this person? So you lean over, and you give them the finger, and they give you the finger. Well, you're matching. It didn't lead to rapport. You match yourself into pain. You know, that's what fighting is all about. Two guys square off. You know, they're doing the same thing.
And they're in rapport, right?
Huh?
That's true.
And they're totally in rapport, but they're going to beat each other's brains out. So it doesn't mean, rapport doesn't necessarily mean better things, it doesn't, unless your intention is to have better things. And if your intention is, and the other person's intention isn't, without any blame or without any fault, you know what I'm saying? There's just, you know, sometimes you're just not destined to be together. And that's okay.
Sure.
The question
becomes,
there are
people
what do you,
who are still learning the small chunk rapport stuff and not also learning improved sensory acuity and improved awareness skills, so they think they're in rapport when they're often not. I've certainly seen that often enough. You know, I have to say it's really thrilling to have a more in-depth discussion of the higher chunk reasons for learning and experiencing NLP and building a more joyful life with it.
So all the higher junk and all the higher chunks, it's that don't major in minor thing. It's all the big stuff that's important. It's none of these little things.
I agree.
You know, are truly important. If you have sensory acuity, like what you just said, if you don't have the sensory acuity to notice things, then what was it for? That's a tiny chunk. It's insignificant, you know. And so it's purpose that drives you. It's
yes,
the big
agreed.
Stuff that drives you. It's
but
your value.
Before we continue the discussion, could I step in for a moment and ask if there's anyone on the call who would like to ask some questions about what we've been talking about? We've gone a good 40 minutes here.
We really?
Since the chat room has not is not active at the moment, so if there's somebody on the call who's not in the chat room, go ahead and hit star 6. Perhaps the technology is not optimal. Go ahead and hit star 6 and ask any questions that are active.
How do
say
I get channel 13 on Uverse?
Who is this?
I was kidding. That was me.
Oh, that was you. Okay. If there's somebody else there that that has unmuted themselves, first say your name, please. Okay. So no questions are forthcoming at the moment. Just wanted to make sure we gave people an opportunity. So let's return to the conversation about accelerated learning and ways of improving how one approaches things to learn things more effectively and more quickly and more in-depth and more naturally and easily and joyfully and all of that good stuff. And before I do, I just wanted to make sure that people who are listening to the call are aware that you and I are running a course in November, November 2 through 13. It's a 12-day inclusive, immersive course that leads people to practitioner level. And this is the kind of course that rarely comes along. First of all, Rex hasn't been training since 2001, and so it's a real gift to the NLP community to make this available to all of you. I hope that you'll join us. It's going to be an exciting, truly amazing experience. We'll get a chance to train with Rex and to have both of us working together with you and to give feedback on all of the learning experiences that you have throughout the day is amazing. So if you haven't seen that on our website, I'll send an email out after the call, just making sure you know where the links are. So coming back to our call, our topics, let's talk about accelerated learning. Let's talk about ways that you know, ways that you learned and experienced that can help people to accelerate or improve their learning experiences.
Okay. I'm happy to do that. One of the things is you learn, like I said, in the state in where you're optimal. That doesn't mean that you're like high and frenetic and manic and you know so over the top like a lightning, you know, bolt. It doesn't mean intense, concentrated study like you know you did when you were in grade school or high school or college where you were cramming for an exam. You can't push a rope. And one of the things about learning is that it's very fluid. It's like a rope. You can pull a rope, but you can't push the rope. And so, and if you, all you have to do is look at our educational system to determine what's wrong with learning. And that is, first off, they put kids in desks and they sit them down and they make them spend, you know, 40 minutes or 50 minutes concentrating on a particular topic. And then they go from there to the next one. Sometimes they're in the same room. They don't really go anywhere. Sometimes in high school they go from class to class to class or in college, you know, they may have time off or whatever. And they go back and then they sit and they sit and they sit and they learn. And they do paper and pencil tests, which is a way of saying, okay, I want to know that you know this. And so the only way I know that you know this is to give you an exam that asks you essentially closed questions. You know, what happened in 1776? And or they give you essay tests where you get to expound a little bit about it, but again, it's essentially a kind of a closed question. So you're regurgitating information, and then you move on. And then once that topic is done, you go to a new topic, and you never come back and return. Sometimes you have a final at the end of the year where it's comprehensive, and they go back through the semester or something, and they say, okay, what happened here and what happened there, and they kind of sampling your learning to see what stuck with you. But in general, most of it's, okay, you got it, you've acknowledged that you got it, now go learn something new. During this time, especially if you're familiar with children in grade school, they limit the amount of time, and in fact, whenever there are budget cuts, they take out more recess, they take out more sports, they take out more gym, and they remove those things in favor of, let's get tough on the kids because they have to be number one in math because we're number 57 in the world. All of which is competitive, of course, but it's not good for the children. It's good that we have a better ranking for the United States, but it's not benefiting the kids. To learn and to really learn, you have to go back and be a child. Because when you were a child, you learned automatically. You learned language without ever having read a book, without ever taking a course. You learned how to walk without reading a book or watching a video. Yes, there were people who were walking around you, so you modeled some of that. You learned how to do all sorts of things like, you know, put food into your mouth, and you learned through an autocorrect mechanism, meaning you put your food in your face and you put it on the chair and you put it in your chest and you put it in your mom or dad's face or your caretakers or whatever, until finally you got the muscle control through correcting back and forth movements until you could hone it into your mouth, and then you got it. You moved your body, you rolled, you crawled, you experienced the world, you put dirt in your mouth. You had this incredible experience of all of the senses being involved in what you were doing. And they remove all that the second you get to school. Now you're sitting down, you gotta be quiet, if you're having fun, you shouldn't be. If you smile at your friend, no, that's not appropriate, you can't talk, you know. And so they put you in the least optimal state for learning, then they shovel this information at you, then they make you take a test, and meanwhile they don't let you move your body. So what is accelerated learning? Is it's going back and trying to recapture that natural state in which you learn. It's having the good feelings, it's having permission, it's being relaxed, it's being up, it's moving your body. It's doing things like rolling and cross-crawling, or what we call brain gym, where you start making what contralateral movements where the right side of your body comes in contact with the left side of your body. It's things like
yoga. I remember
yoga.
We were doing brain gym every single session in track training.
Yep. You know, it's searching and scanning your universe for those things that are new and different, things that you never paid attention to before, things that you can feel gratitude about. You know, it's looking for things that allow you to be more in touch with the universe around you and to feel more an intricate part of it. And when you're doing that, it's like rolling down a hill. I always would tell people at CDRL, go roll down a hill, because the inner ear, the vestibular system, is one that in adults is rarely ever activated. We sit or we lie prone or we stand, but we very rarely do somersaults or cartwheels or roll down the hills or you know, hang upside down. Which is all the kinds of things we did when we were a child. We rarely spin, you know, around like maybe we did when we were a kid, you know, stand and spin like the whirling dervishes. All of those things are things that we did to learn. Then what you do is you want to present the information in a pleasant way. You can do big chunk and small chunk and go back and forth. But I like to work with principles first, as opposed to the tiny stuff first. I like to pour it through the large end of the funnel rather than start with the small end of the funnel. But you do both. When it comes to learning, you go through deduction and induction, and you have and help people make connections to things that they didn't otherwise notice. And if they didn't notice, and you could point that out and say, did you notice this? And they said no, and you go, watch here. Then they know where to look the next time, and they have the opportunity to learn. So when I would teach, you know, I would do a lot of stuff with videotape. Great thing about videotape is you can go back and say, did you see that? And they go, no. You go, okay, well, watch again. Did you see it that time? And they go, nope. You go, okay, watch again. Did you see it that time? And you go, nope. And then finally somebody goes, oh, wait, I saw it, you know. Or you go, okay, well, here, let's go back and look at this. And they go back and look at this, and guess what? You know, they didn't notice that. Well, then guess what? Their senses are tuned to watch the next moment. And the moment after that, because sometimes they're off thinking about, oh, my goodness, my stomach is grumbling, I'm hungry, what are we having for lunch? Well, that's not the way to learn. But we all have distractions, and we all go in different directions, and we all have that. And so, again, accelerated learning is about how do you bring that back? How do you bring people back to the moment in which they're best able to learn? Then you let them go out and play. You let them go out and use the stuff, because it's the use at the water cooler, it's the use at lunch, it's the use out at the shopping mall where it's the most important, because they get exposed to it. This is my you pre-expose them. Well, they'll have to come to the workshop to get the rest of the steps. But the bottom line is, you pre-expose them, you let them get immersed, you let them have some hands-on practice, and then ultimately what happens is it becomes their own. Now, I do want to say this. Accelerated learning and fast-track NLP and all that kind of stuff. The promise of NLP was always that if you had a model, you could use NLP to compare and contrast the elements of the model, deconstruct it, so to speak, build a better model or build a working model for yourself, and then replicate the talent or the abilities or the know-how or whatever it might have been that the original subject had, shorter than it took or faster than it took the original subject to learn it. Now, this is all fine and well, but if you learn to do everything Milton Erickson did, and it took him, you know, a lifetime, and in your lifetime, you learned it one day less than it took him.
Excuse me.
Well, you learned it in a faster amount of time. Huh?
It's still faster, yes.
It's still faster, and that's same with accelerated learning. People, and here's the thing. There's no magic pill when it comes to learning. You can accelerate it. There's no magic pill when it comes to NLP. You can cut down the amount of time it takes to learn certain things, not maybe everything, who knows, or maybe everything, and who knows. But the point is this. If you believe 99% of the marketing stuff that's out there about, well, you can learn this in 5 days or 7 days or 2 days or 1 day, or you can, you know, pour it in your head while you sleep, then the entire world would be better than it is. Because if there were truly magic bullets, don't you think everybody would already have been using it? Don't you think the government would do it? Don't you think we'd already been taken over and not even have a clue? I mean, the idea is that people will say, this guy says he can do this to me in 4 days, you know, and I'm going to do that rather than to take my time and energy and effort to learn something. Well, if he could do it in 4 days, don't you think that everybody in the world would have gone to him already? They would have discovered him?
Well, I certainly think that's happening out there, and weird promises are being made, and people are showing up for things, and chances
that's
are...
Because the point. My point is about, well, no, my point is that people are gullible when that happens. They're gullible. I mean, how come it takes sports teams so long to get them the best? Why don't they just go to a hypnotist?
When they're already, some do go to hypnotists, but you're absolutely right that there is
no
magic
bullet. I know they go to hypnotists, and they do have coaches and success coaches, but what I'm saying is they still have to get out there and practice, and they still have to practice for their whole practice season, and then they have to practice and play during their game season. They don't sit in a chair. They don't do a mail order course. You know, they don't just go inside their head and suddenly become a better football player or a better surgeon. Huh?
I'm getting a lot of digital noise. Sorry. It seems to be improving now. Maybe I got some of what you saw last time.
Aha. Okay.
Okay. So
the point is there's no magic bullet. There's no magic cure. There's no substitute for doing the work. The work can be enjoyable. It can be fun. It can take you places that you've never, ever thought you would go. It can be inspiring. It can be anything and everything you want it to be.
And in some cases, it can be profoundly, profoundly moving and changing. And patterns can be changed, and new patterns can emerge that that no one may have ever even predicted or even hoped for. But didn't know they were missing. You know, amazing. Things can happen.
My point is this. NLP was built on massive amounts of failure. People think, it was built on all these successes, but it wasn't. It was built on failure. In other words, it was built on, we didn't get the result we want, what else do we need to do? We did get the result we want, what else should we try? We didn't get the result we want, where do we go now? In other words, think about that. What I'm doing right now is asking a question. I don't know what the answer is. I'm just saying, what do we do? Where do we go? What do we should? So it's all based on the fact that when it comes down to it, you can learn something. But you'll never be as good as Milton Erickson if you learn what Milton Erickson did in a month. Because
absolutely.
Milton Erickson had a lifetime of experience, and where you gain wisdom is through failure. Where you gain wisdom is through trial and error. Where you gain wisdom is through, you get more in many cases, not always, but in many cases through your failure than you do through your successes. Because too early of success, you shut down. You go, oh, cool, I got it. I know it. Man, I'm done. I'm so hot, you know. They almost always know that the salesman, excuse me, that the salesperson who right out of the gate sells a ton of stuff will not last as long and not do as well over time as the salesperson who has a rough start.
Well, that's because intriguing.
The person who has a rough start
is learning more.
Has to learn requisite variety. Learn how to adjust their behaviors in order to succeed. That's why all the good-looking jocks that beat you up because you were the nerd and ugly kid in school are not the fat, bald, ugly kids in their 40s and 50s, and the nerds are the rich ones and the good-looking ones and the ones who blossomed later in life because they had to learn how to do other things. They didn't skate by on their successes. And if you're trying to skate by in terms of getting NLP, if you're trying to skate by a program, then I'm gonna take the fast track because I got to get it in a weekend, and then you're truly missing out. The best way.
Well, I certainly agree with that. That's kind of why I asked you early on, and you agreed that we would offer people who may have been trained to practitioner level, quote unquote, think they were trained to practitioner level. If they wanted to come to our course, we'd offer some kind of an offer, like a special deal, and that's certainly shown on the course webpage.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's getting close to 9 p.m., and we're almost at an hour. Do you have any thoughts about sort of extraneous topics that we've danced around throughout the course of the evening, things you wanted to make sure we covered?
I probably do. That would be the answer to your question.
Yep. All right.
I don't. You know. Go ahead. I mean, I don't. For now, no. I mean, other than to say, the goal that Jonathan and I have for the practitioner, my goal has always been to be able to model or mentor, to invite people to learn. I don't believe that there's teaching. I believe that there's learning. There's presenting information. And then the student is either savvy enough to pick it up or not. And the presenter can make the climate the most likely for the person to pick it up and craft experiences that are designed for the person to pick it up. But it truly is up to the person to do that. It's about being responsible and being accountable. Nobody is doing it for you. You're doing it for yourself. And you get what you put into it proportionally or exponentially. In other words, if you really open up that little window, you might have exponential growth in terms of your abilities and your happiness and your enjoyment because you've opened up that window. But nobody can open it for you. And nobody can keep it open for you. No one will force you to keep it open. No one can shut it down for you. That's all you're doing. So same thing with your skills in the training program. You either learn them or you don't. We present them. But the cool part about all of that is when you leave, they're your skills. They're the things that you've acquired through your effort. You know, and you can say thanks, but we can't take credit for you having the skill because you did the work to get there. You did the exercises we presented, but you did it. So it's truly up to you, and it's a partnership in that way, and that we have an agreement that we're going to try and see you through it and help you along and make it, you know, whatever it was. We're going to challenge you, too, because there are times when it's appropriate to challenge. There are times when it's appropriate to put someone in a maybe less than optimal state so that they or help them be in a less than optimal state so they find out how to get out of less than optimal states. You know, if you're always in a good state and then suddenly they were a bad state, you didn't know how to get out of a bad state. So,
well, that's,
you know,
labor of flexibility. We have to give them opportunities to find that.
Right. But the biggest opportunity is to come and learn, and I mean truly learn, and make it your own, and own it, and take it with you. And I can promise you that after the program, if you review the program, you get tapes, you know, the program or something like that, or if you think back on the program, you'll have more ahas and ahas and ahas and ahas as time goes on. Because what happens is that as you gain experience, the things you've been exposed to and pre-exposed to, those connections that haven't yet cemented themselves yet or haven't really established themselves in positive ways are those things that will continue to connect up long after the training actually officially ends. But you're not done. It's kind of like, you know, when you cook meat, you know, you take it out and you put it on the stove, the meat relaxes before you serve it. You don't just take it right out of the oven and serve it, you know, or you boil eggs for a little while, then you let them sit in warm water for 20 minutes because the cooking continues even though the water temperature is decreasing.
Lovely metaphor.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, it's the same kind of thing. The cooking's not done when you leave the program. It's simmering all through the program. The cooking continues. The dessert is yet to come, you know. And believe me, that's what it is. It's about discovering. And so the goal is to open up a new world for yourself where it's richer and more vibrant, where you see more things and hear more things and feel more things and create the connections with the people that you want to have and to do and to be. And really, what NLP always did was to say, well, if you want to be, you have to do in order to have. And truly, it's the other way around. You be first.
Indeed.
You be first.
And that comes back to the high-level approach. In other words, knowing how you want to be and what you want to be and the reasons why before ever dealing with the smaller chunk, the patterning.
Right.
I have to share with you that one of the things I'm really looking forward to for future conversations is exploring discussions of NLP, perhaps in film, movies, television, examples that people may not even know that are out there, that they've seen or been exposed to without necessarily having heard of it being called NLP. Would you be interested in that subject?
I would. I don't know how much there is to talk about on it, but yeah, sure. I'm going, let me think about that for a while. But yeah, sure, I'd be happy to talk about it. I'm usually happy to talk about anything.
That's one of the neat things about you. So possibly a chat on or a conversation on NLP and film and television, and maybe even some discussions of, because I remember, you know, at your course, we saw some videos of some of the talking heads around the OJ course. And we talked about some of the folks out there that may very well have had NLP training, and I think people would find that absolutely fascinating. So maybe we'll talk a little bit about that sort of thing, too.
Well, we did. I mean, we can preface it by saying, you know, we looked at political candidates, we looked at attorneys, we looked at comedians, we looked at therapists, we looked at different people, you know, who were top of their field and went in to discover what they had that was similar. In other words, what did they do that was very similar that brought about excellent results, and then how were they different, and how did those differences contribute to them having excellent results? And then we would, maybe I shouldn't say this on the air, but this is part of our programs, but I mean, it was all released in tapes anyway, but I'm kidding, but then, you know, it all goes back to their modeling courses, and then we would say, okay, build a model for this. You know, in other words, if you were going to be an excellent speaker, if you were going to be an attorney and argue, if you were going to be a comedian, if you wanted to make a political speech, what are the components? What are they doing? You know, and what can you do? You know, and that's where people got to test it out. They got to see if what they looked at and the components and better programs and the strategies and all the NLP terminology that you're familiar with, what were the anchors and where were they leveraging, you know, this and that, where's the propulsion, all that stuff is stuff that we would tease out and then have people go, okay, now build it and do it, put it in yourself.
Very cool.
and try it. So yeah, we could talk about that.
Yeah, I'd like to. I think that's a topic that's rich for discussion. So, again, thank you for joining me yet again for our second teleconference, and I'm certainly looking forward to some more exciting ones with you. And I'll also thank those who have been on the call and with us live, and also those who listen to the recording afterwards over and over again. I've gotten some really interesting emails already.
Yeah, is there an opportunity for some questions at the end here?
Absolutely. We ran a little long with our conversation, but let's go ahead and open things up. Sounds like Mark is already unmuted, which is terrific.
Yeah,
Mark, go ahead.
I've got a question. I've heard that learning NLP and getting really proficient at it requires almost like a sociopathic type of approach to pulling yourself out of the out of the moment and kind of analyzing and doing the techniques so that they become so they become automatic. Is that true? And with your training, with the training that you're giving in the fall in November, is that going to be necessary in order to become a real expert at what will be learning in the process?
Were you here for the earlier part of the call?
I was.
Okay. Well, then sociopathic about doing these things isn't really my approach. And I would bet that some people will try that way, but the answer is, as far as I'm concerned, would be no.
What I got from the earlier part of the call is that your approach involves so much activity and so much immersion in the environment that you set up that you'll come away from the training with an instinctual knowledge of how to do these things.
Yes and no. You could, yes, you very much can, yes indeed. And will you? Well, that's truly up to you. But that's all responsibility. Well, right. So, the point is what I'm trying to say is, we'll set the environment. Now, there's when you say there's so much activity, it's not you're immersed, but that doesn't mean that immersion is always one note. There's different things to be immersed at, and there's highs and lows, or there's it's like the wave is up and the wave is a trough. You know, it's not having a one note learning experience. It's having an enriched, like living in a garden. Some days it rains, and some days it's windy, and some days it's dry, and some days it's hot, and some days it's really hot, and some days it's cold. I mean, so the idea is to create as much of a kind of parallel to what you live in. But some people live, very different. They live in crap a lot of the time. And so they're coming, and we want to create something that's really nice for them and give them the opportunity to be inside of something where they have fun and they delight and they learn how easy it is when they direct their mind and their body and their resources in a way to take advantage of that. It's not a note. There are things that will happen as a direct result of being there and interacting with the trainers. There's what will happen between the exercises and you, and there's going to be what happens between the students. Each of the students, the synergy that goes on. One person will ask a question that somebody may not think is important, but it might be directly applicable to the person who doesn't think it's important. So it's about the experience. It's about the gestalt of it. It's the wholeness. It's kind of like, the idea is to eat the whole apple, and to savor it and take it. Now, what happens when you leave? Yeah, you continue to unpack and you continue to learn, but you will have ahas maybe the rest of your life. But if, for example, you think, okay, I'm going to go do a boot camp and I'm going to do push-ups every day and sit-ups every day and I'm going to do jumping jacks every day and I'm going to get ripped and I'm going to have six-pack abs, I'm going to do all this stuff, and you go into something for 2 weeks like that and it's high intensity training and you rip up your muscles and all that kind of stuff, and then you leave and you never do any work on your muscles again, you won't have a six-pack ab for very long.
Right.
True.
So,
and I can add to that by saying, from the student perspective, that I never had that experience at Rex's course where I felt so immersed in being intensely analytical. I think there were analytical moments. I think there were holistic experiences. I think there were Rex uses the metaphor for waves. I think that's what I felt like. I was being carried through such a wealth and breadth of different experiences that I was engaging so much of my different, let's say, capacities for learning in so many different ways that what ended up happening was, holistically, I got better at it over time. And it wasn't as if there weren't stumbling blocks along the way, but it was the kind of environment in which catharsis and amazing eureka aha moments, plus just the pure joy of learning with laughter, was wonderful. And I know I never felt like it was so intensely focused that I needed to get to some level. I just I was driven to enjoy and experience and also learn. And I had goals, of course. That was very, very important. In fact, as I recall, Rex was reminding us to reconnect with our goals nightly. It was wonderful.
Well, and thank you. I appreciate that. The idea, again, Mark, is that I don't really want you to analyze except at certain times. And those moments are when it's appropriate. In other words, we are, you know, I mean, if you know about NLP and you know that we can associate and we can dissociate, we can be in the moment, or we can kind of sit back as a movie director, you know, and watch what's on the movie screen, you know, those different kinds of people would call them perceptual positions, that kind of stuff. There's a time and a place to be fully associated, and there's a time and a place to be dissociated, and knowing when is part of what wisdom is all about. And so learning how to do that for yourself, when you should be completely immersed, is important. Knowing when to step back and dissect it and analyze it and look at it is part of what gives you a conscious appreciation for the unconscious skill that you're acquiring. I don't want your skills to be completely unconscious. That's not a goal. You should be unconsciously competent in the same way that you ride a bike to a friend's house. But if somebody said, well, how do you ride a bike? You should be able to say, well, you know, now you may not be able to explain what balance is, you know, in the sense that you're not able to articulate it, but you understand how you balance and what you do, you know. So there should be a conscious appreciation for what you learn and acquire. There's going to be an unconscious thing. If you think about it this way, your conscious mind is like the TV set in your living room, and your unconscious mind is all the rest of the house. You know, it's the outside, the backyard, and the neighbors, and it's down the block and around the corner. You know, what you can pay attention to consciously is small by comparison. So the goal is to have all of each of every part of you there, you know, in a holistic way, in an integrated way, not to fractionate, not to, you know, but psychopathically analyze is not something that I would do in terms of learning NLP. You will learn more about NLP if you just have fun with it and play with it and explore as if you were out in a schoolyard jumping rope or tossing a ball or you know, learning a new video game or something like that. It's the addicts who go, I have to master this, that usually get in their own way.
Absolutely agreed. That's a great answer. Thank you.
Yeah.
I don't know if it answered the question, though. I mean, you know, I gave my answer to how I understood the question, and I may or may not have understood the question the way Mark was asking it.
No, well, you did. You mean the different states, the immersion, and when you go out, there's a part of you. It's almost the way I see it now is that, you know, I'll just be living my life, and at the end of the day or at the end of the interaction, I might go, holy shit, I just did that.
Right.
And then be able to unpack it and figure out maybe, oh, I could have done it a little better, but not while I'm in the moment doing it. I don't have to be out of context. I don't have to be out of contact with the interaction. I can be totally immersed in the interaction and still be
exactly.
able to... Right?
Are you familiar with the work of Csikszentmihalyi? Flow? Csikszentmihalyi, he wrote a book called Flow?
No. But I'm very much into flow.
Well, but the idea being the zone, it's like, you know, when you watch the Olympics going on, people think about it this way. These people train night and day. They train hours a day. They eat right. They sleep right. And they envision going to the Olympics. They spend 4 years or 8 years or 12 years training to get there. By the way, I'm interviewing the high jump competitor, Jamie Nieto, on my show Thursday. So we've done one discussion about being an Olympic contender and talking. He's also an actor, so we talk about that. But the point being is they intensely train. And they train for a second's worth of effort. You know, I mean, how long is it when they run the 100-yard dash? How long does it take?
Mm-hmm. Doesn't take
seconds. Seconds. You know, what about tennis players? You know, that kind of, you know, the people who excel, I mean, and all these people are top athletes. I mean, you know, even the worst among them is far better than I'll ever be at most of whatever they're trying. So, I mean, these are top people in the world. They spend all this time training, and then they perform. Now, if while they're performing, they start analyzing, my guess is They're going to screw up.
Yeah.
They're done. So you got to be in that zone. Yep, you got it exactly. You got to be in that zone. You got to be in the flow. You do it, and then after the fact, you can go, "Oh wow, you know what I did? I did this, 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 and this. And this is how I did it, and that's why I did it, and all that kind of stuff." And you can elaborate on it because you can understand and appreciate it because of your training, and because of your experience, and because of your failure. I mean, again, that goes back to failure brings wisdom. Success, early success, brings just a stopping point for most people.
Right.
So
I'm extremely familiar with that.
If you were 8 years old and went a gold,
I'm extremely familiar with that flow. I've been a professional athlete for most of my adult life.
Well, there you go.
I've been using hypnosis for helping training some of the top athletes. And the thing is, there's a competitive state and there's a rehearsal state, or there's a training state. You don't want to bring your training state into the competitive state at all.
Right.
Once you do that, you're finished. You train for the competence, for being in the competitive state, and once you're in the competition, you got to let everything else go, anything that your coach is telling you, anything you thought you needed to focus on, that has to be gone. You just have to let the body do what you've trained it to do and rely upon your training to come to, you know, to raise you to the occasion. That's it.
Exactly. You know what? That's beautiful. That was awesome. What you just said was awesome. And you know the other cool part about that is that as a coach, as a hypnotist, as a trainer for them, if somebody's in their rehearsal state and you say, hey, you know what, you're not in the right state, the goal for them is to learn how they get out of one and into the other and how they are reliably in the one they need to be in when they're doing what they're doing. So they need to know that when to be in the rehearsal state, they need to know when to be in their competitive state. They need to know when they're relaxing and they're in neither of those states. In other words, that's the awareness that and the accountability and the responsibility that comes with their training and having the experiences and the opportunities to both excel and to not excel that allows them to know the difference.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
With 7 minutes left in our recording, I thought I would ask if there are other folks that would like to have a chance to ask Rex a question.
Thanks, Rex. Thanks very much. Thanks.
Oh, you bet, Mark. It's a beautiful answer that you provided. I appreciate that very much.
Oh, good. Thank you.
No, that's awesome.
If there are others still on the recording and you'd like to unmute yourself and ask Rex a question, now would be a great time. And you unmute yourself by hitting *6.
I understand you like to wear mismatched socks. Is that true?
I heard it that time.
What?
My daughter's
that was
that.
Me again. That was me again. Okay. I'm asking my own question.
Rex, this is Ree. I've so enjoyed the time with you. And Jonathan, thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, Ree.
And I, too, enjoyed what the young athlete just said. It was eloquently said. And stay in the flow, Rex.
Oh, that's awesome. That's cool. You are somebody who is near and dear to my heart. We don't nearly have the kind of communication that we throughout the years.
I know. I love you, too.
It's been so many years, too. Well, thank
Since
you.
Since 1989.
Gosh, is it? 89. Oh, yeah.
So good to hear you. And I'm going to sign off now.
Well, sounds
well
good.
You
Thanks
take care. We'll see you next time or hear you next time and see you on Facebook and all those great places. All right, thanks.
All right. Love to you both.
All right. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And I will say thank you all for joining us. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that you stayed with us, or that if you're listening at home, that you enjoyed a very thorough, longer recording than we expected, which is terrific, and hope you got lots of value from tonight's call. We've got another few calls planned over the next few weeks and a couple of months, and we hope that you'll join us in November in Orlando. Rex and I will be training together for 12 days straight. It's going to be an extraordinary course. It's getting late for us here. I have to travel to Los Angeles tomorrow. Rex, I thank you again for joining me on the call. And I look forward to our next opportunity. We'll send a message out to the list when we know our schedule.
You've been great as always. I appreciate everything. I appreciate the interaction with the callers and the opportunity to discuss some of these important topics. I hope I see and meet people who have joined us on these calls, whether live or have been listening to the recording. I hope I get to meet them in November at the training. But wherever we meet or however we meet or whether we meet or any of that, celebrate. Make life, you know, a joyous experience as only you can. So enjoy.
That sounds great.